Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Goon Squad Sports Show. Here we go. Another edition of the Goon Squad. Your host Puma here. We got another special guest coming up. His name is Ice Water out of Ohio, one of my good buddies. And we're going to share a lot of sports with you in the next 2 hours. You can call and listen to the show, or you want to chime in at 914-219-0880. Or you can log into Blog Talk Radio, log into the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show with yours truly, Puma, and you can listen to the show live. Now, the phone will prompt you if you want to call in. I will see a little hand raised up, and I know that you want to call in with a question, so feel free to call in with a question, or if you just want to call and chill and listen to some sports from what I call our experts, you can listen in. How you doing, Ice Water?
Doing good. What's good, Puma? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay, man. Welcome to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show, man. I've been trying to get you here for a little while now.
Well, you know what? I'm a little nervous. I don't know about the expectations. You know, I don't do well under pressure. That's why they call me Ice Water. I fold under pressure.
I'm sure you'll be fine, man. I know one of the things that I want to let people know about you is that whenever we're together, man, you're a sports journalist. I'm not going to give you a real name. But every time we're together, man, I always ask for your advice on some of the sports stories and topics and the different figures in sports. And you're really spot on, especially in boxing, baseball, and you're located in Ohio. So I always, and I used to live in Ohio, so I always ask you about some of the stuff that's happening in Ohio. But I want to start out the show with congratulating the kids here in Chicago, the Jackie Robinson Little League team, on their way to the Little League World Series. I think it's really great, not only for Chicago, because a lot of people around the country always hear about the bad things in Chicago, but here you have some young men who have made it to the World Series after 30 years, and they're all black teams. Young men are going to be playing this Thursday. Kudos to the families, the parents, and the community. I used to go out there in that community a lot. I have a lot of friends in that community. So I think it's in the Morgan Park community. So kudos to those guys. And this is great, I think, for baseball, too, because I found out that baseball only has 8% African-American players in baseball. And so hopefully this will be a catalyst of getting more African-American players in baseball. So
right.
I know
I'll get you on that. I just wanted to point out, too, that I believe also in Pennsylvania there is a team primarily of African-Americans. And the unique thing about that team is there's a young lady that pitches for the team.
Oh, wow.
They made the World
okay.
Series as well. So we need to watch out for that team as well out of Pennsylvania.
Okay, yeah, definitely I'll be watching out for that. I didn't know that. But, wow, that's great. That's great. So let's talk about Major League Baseball, man, because I know the White Sox are supporting the Jackie Robinson team here. But let's talk about White Sox. Who you got, man? I mean, the races are coming up. I want to know, who do you think? I know our locks for the playoffs, but who are those wild card teams that we need to look for, and who do you think is going to make it to the World Series?
Wow, you're asking a lot for $2. No, I'm just kidding.
I know, man.
No, I'm just kidding. You already know why I was going to start with this. I can't help myself. It is what it is. But if you look at the wild card standings, you got a couple things going on here. In the American League, you have the L.A. now Angels, I guess they're called. They're running
mm-hmm.
right there. Of course, Detroit's right there in second place, actually tied with the Angels. Seattle's close. Toronto's close. The Yankees are three back. Cleveland's five back. So it's kind of wide open right now. We're getting close to it. But I think that pitching is going to be the key to all of this. You have to have timely hitting, but you also have to have pitching. Detroit has made some major moves, of course, picking up Price from Tampa, which was huge. Of course, they have trying to get Verlander back on track. But the thing for them is they have been struggling hitting the ball. And that's
mm-hmm.
why a lot of people think that the Oakland A's will do well because of the fact that they made some moves pitching-wise, but they play small ball, so they always find ways to make hits. They really are not a team that relies on home runs. So with that
mm-hmm.
being said, I mean, I like Detroit. I see Detroit making a run. I like Detroit perhaps making the wild card. The Angels, of course, will be around. Those teams right now that I really like, if you look at the standings, like I said, in the American League, at the leaders, you have Baltimore leading in the East. You have Kansas City right now taking over from Detroit, leading in the Central. And, of course, you have the Oakland A's leading in the West. I don't know. Kansas City's real hot right now. They came out of nowhere. They haven't won made the playoffs since the 80s. People are really
They won like eight straight. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Right. But and I heard something very very funny or humorous. They really they're not a sexy team when you watch them or you check them out even stat wise. I think their second best pitcher with the best ERA is like 7-10.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like putting it together. They're rigging it, as we know what that word means, but they're rigging it.
Yeah.
So,
no, that's what sometimes you got to do it that way.
yeah, they're rigging it. But I'm not sure if they have the personnel to hold on. So I'm thinking that Detroit will rise above and probably hold on that. So with all that being said, to try to round us up in the American League, I think Detroit will win the Central. It's kind of early now. I think Baltimore is going to try to find a way to hold on. But I like Toronto. I don't think the Yankees are going to make that run that we normally think they will. So I'm either looking at either going to be Baltimore or Toronto. I think Oakland will win the West. And that's what I'm looking at right now. So I don't want to – I know that's a lot, and we still haven't reached the National League yet. So I'm going to break it up.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you tell me what you want to know, and I'll run through it. But right now I'm looking at – I like Detroit to win the East. I like Baltimore to win the East. I like Detroit to win the Central and Oakland to secure themselves in the West. And I think the Angels – will make the wild card because I think they have enough hitting and pitching. And then the other wild card, I think, is still up in the air in the American League.
Because usually I don't follow baseball until this time of year because, to me, the season's off. But usually the Yankees start making their push right about now. And I'm a Yankees fan, but I don't know if they have enough to get into a wild card. If they do, it would be great. Jeter's last year. It'd be great to do it, but they always seem to make this push. What scares me about the East is Baltimore's been knocking on the door for a long time, and that's why I kind of think they are the team to beat in the East. Even though the Oakland A's are playing good, basic, small ball, I like Baltimore in the East and maybe even to represent the American League. I do like Detroit, but it seems like, I don't know, Detroit is, they've been knocking on the door for a while, but they just can't get over the hump. And the Los Angeles Angels, they are a team that I want to watch, along with Seattle, too. They stole Cano from us, from us Yankee fans. Oh, yeah. We're still sore about that. And they have the pitcher there. I forget his name right now, but the one that cocks his hat to the side.
Right.
I forget his name. But he cracks me up. I just like watching games just to watch him in games with the cocked hat to the side. And he says he wears that to confuse batters, and he's doing a good job of it. Toronto and Tampa Bay always scared me because they seem to be Yankee killers. They seem to be able to, and Baltimore in that division, they just seem to have learned how to play the Yankees and always give the Yankees a tough time. So that's why I don't think the Yankees, I would hope that they would turn it on, but if they have to come down the stretch and play those three teams, because Boston's really out of it. We're not really worried about Boston. But Tampa Bay, Toronto, and Baltimore, that will put the Yankees out of contention for that wild card. So.
Yeah, I think the Yankees, too. The problem with the Yankees is the Yankees don't really have a pitching that they usually do. I mean, CeCe Sabathia is done for the year. I mean, you go down the line, you don't really have a marquee name. They usually pull something off, and they haven't done that, and I think that's going to be their downfall. As you mentioned before, I mean, that's why I kind of like Detroit. Even without Verlander, they have Price, and they have another possible Cy Young winner that's really rolling. And if they can just start hitting the ball a little bit, I think they're going to cause some problems. As you mentioned, Oakland is topsy-turvy. They had a pitching, but the question is, can a small ball get them through? So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I do like Baltimore as well, but I guess I'm wondering, are they ever going to get over the hump, as you mentioned before, and do they have the experience to say, okay, now it's our time? And I think that's going to be key in the American League. So I think that's why they're there. But if we look at the National League is pretty much up for grabs as well, because we have Washington leading right now in the East. Milwaukee's leading in the Central. The Dodgers, of course, are leading in the West. And anytime you have those teams trying to hold on in each division and their rivals coming at them, for instance, in the East, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, San Francisco Giants in the West, I think the National League is going to be so heated in regards to races because they're so close. If you look right now, Pittsburgh's trailing Milwaukee in the Central by 2.5. St. Louis is 3 back. The Reds are only 5.5 back. In the West, San Francisco down by 5 to the Dodgers. Atlanta down by 4 to Washington. And even Miami's only down by 6 to Washington.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be heated. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be very competitive in the National League.
Yeah. I love the rivalry. I'm a Dodgers fan, too. I love the San Francisco-Dodger rivalry. And it would be nothing better for San Francisco to try to put the Dodgers away. It's like if one of the teams are ahead, the other team is trying to drag the other team down. I like the Dodgers coming out of this league in the National League, but I'm really kind of looking at the dark horse in this is Pittsburgh. I don't know why.
Okay.
I kind of like their team. They seem to they're very exciting. I get to watch them when they play the Cubs here. They're just a very exciting team to watch. And I don't know. I look at Pittsburgh as a team that may kind of emerge. We'll see. In the last 10 games, they've been 6-4. But they're playing teams in their division, which I don't think they have problems with their teams in the division. They have problems on the road. They have a losing record on the road right now. But San Francisco and the Dodgers, I have to go with that. Washington, I'm really not sold on. And Atlanta has always been that strong team out of the South, but out of the East, I mean. But I'm really not sold on. I'm really looking at the Dodgers really coming out the National League.
Okay, so Dodgers. I will say this. I like Pittsburgh, too, as well. But I think with McClendon being hurt, I'm wondering, is he going to be able to come back strong for them? Because, you know,
yeah.
he's the guy that kind of stirs the drink, if you will. And they can get him back and healthy. I think that's really going to help them. But I'll just throw this last dark horse out because they always find a way, at least for the last 5 years, even when you take all their pitching away, they find a way. Be very careful and watch very closely in the Central, the St. Louis Cardinals. They always
the St. Louis Cardinals?
Yes, sir. They're only three back in the Central. They're only three back right now.
Yeah.
And they always find
okay.
a way. When you say, oh, no way, no way, they go, all right, watch.
Okay.
And if they get in the postseason and they make it to the next round, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah. I that's why I talk to you. That's why I talk to you. Because you give me another perspective to look at. But, yeah, they're coming off of didn't they win the World Series a couple of years ago? The same way?
Yes,
kind of just
yes,
coming
sir.
Up and picking up on folks? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes.
I promise not to, because we have I know a lot of folks from the Chicago Cubs listen to the show. I promise not to say anything bad about the Chicago Cubs. I'm not going to say anything about the Chicago Cubs. I will give you Chicago Cubs fans my rant at the end of the season when all is over. I have a prediction that they're going to lose the same amount of games they lost last year, and I will tell you why. And I will give you the remedy on solving that, but I'm going to save that until the end of the season. What do you think about this A-Rod thing, man? This Tony Boss getting caught, and he was on 60 Minutes last Sunday, and this stuff is getting really, really, really interesting. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, the problem I have with it, really, and I understand everybody's talking about steroids, but we keep keeping the topic around no matter what. We go from one extreme to Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and those guys and the suspicion of Barry Bonds to now dealing with A-Rod, and now we're finally getting some of the, I guess, the meaty pieces about what was really going on. But my major problem with it is we're talking about steroids, but the thing is, though, when are we ever going to get to the point where it's making a difference? I think it is now because they're putting things in place where guys are having a test and they're really getting suspended a certain amount of games, like A-Rod for the whole year, and having to sit out where it's really making a difference. But every time they come out with something, in my opinion, it's like they're talking about guys that this happened to 20 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. They're making a difference now. It's like we are wasting, in my opinion, with the government, so much money chasing after Roger Clemens of the world. I mean, for what?
Yeah.
I mean, so what? Except for the fact that it might mean something in regards to the Hall of Fame. Baseball is kind of like a dollar short on this one because we waste all this time on everything. They're making a difference now because if you notice, and I just my opinion, if you notice now that the home run numbers are down.
Yeah, they are.
You know,
yeah.
They talk about juicing the ball and everything. Now, 40 home runs is huge now in the season. When before, 52, 72, regardless of what's going. You can't tell me the ball's changed, the pitches got better. I mean, come on, let's be real about this. I think that you're seeing in the steroid gate, if you will, making a difference there. But, I mean, it's like with A-Rod. Here's the thing. Yeah, I think, and I'll get off of this, and I definitely want to hear what you like to say about this. I have to say, here's the thing about this. They make all this noise about the steroids and everything, and they make about whether or not these notice about whether these guys should be in the hall. But I think this way. If Pete Rose can go in the hall, everybody wants him in the hall, and okay, I got that. They should say, basically, the A's is like a wash, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you were on steroids, or it shows you're on steroids and you tested positive, let them in. There's so many people that have done bad things that are in the hall. We can go all day and talk about what these guys have done. Here's my thing. Put them in the hall, put a big asterisk next to their their plaque or on their picture or whatever to say they cheated or whatever they did. They were great players, but there are questions about them. I think that their stats, even with Pete Rose, even though he cheated, and he doesn't even know why he's not in. And we'll talk about it another day because I could talk about that for an hour. But the point is, why not? The guys are good enough. Put an asterisk next to their name. Let them in, and then let them just know that, hey, if you wouldn't have done what you had done, we wouldn't have the issues that we do now. But I think they're worthy of getting in. I mean, who's to say why one guy shouldn't get in, why another two guys should not get in? It is really crazy. It's spending a lot of time, foolishness, along with the whole Pete Rose thing. Asterisk them all, the bad guys, and let's move forward.
I agree with you. I think it's baseball's way of romanticizing their sport, of keeping the sport pure and this image that they have of baseball. And I do agree with you. Baseball is a dollar short. Baseball used to be the favorite pastime of everybody, especially in the African-American community, and that's why I gave the big ups to the kids in Chicago and the kids in Pennsylvania too. But it's not anymore. People rather watch football, watch basketball. And so I think it's baseball's way of romanticizing their own sport. It's almost like, you know, when you get older and you start to romanticize how it was when you were a kid. When it might have been just as bad as it is now, but you're romanticizing it because you're kind of forgetting about some of the things that happened that were truly bad during that particular era. I say now that the players that are getting caught with this, like A-Rod and the story I saw on 60 Minutes, there is no way the way the rules are set up now where they're going to let Pete Rose or A-Rod or anybody from this era get into the Hall of Fame just for the simple fact that they want to try to keep or give the image of keeping this sport pure, and that those movies like with the Robert Redford movie, The Natural and all this other stuff, this is this effort to do that. And when you get a guy like A-Rod, who, I mean, if you saw the story on 60 Minutes, I mean, there were some amazing things about A-Rod and what he was doing, sending goons after this guy to keep him quiet, wanting to send him away and pay him $20 a month. I mean, even A-Rod knows the repercussions. If he's doing all that he's accused of, you can sense that he knows the repercussions, that this will ruin my any attempt of me getting in the Hall of Fame. I think that's done. I mean, even if he came back and just played for 3 or 4 years and just, you know, tore it up, I don't think there's any way that he can get in based on all this evidence. And I think he may be used as a scapegoat. He may be used as the poster child for this is what you don't want to do. And just that fact will keep him and a lot of others out of that Hall of Fame. And they're not going to put the asterisk in, I don't think, because that would tarnish the brand. I truly believe that. I wouldn't want an asterisk on my name if they were going to elect me into the Hall of Fame. I don't want people to look at that and say, hey, I'm not as good as these guys because I cheated. I don't know. Maybe others will think differently. But I couldn't go in. If I had to go in and you had to go, I will put you in. But we'll put you in an asterisk, I wouldn't want to do it. I was like, you know what, just don't put me in. I don't want to be on that club. I don't want to have that little special notation saying that I'm in, but under these circumstances. I couldn't do it, yeah. Let's take a break, man. Let's take a break. We can talk about this a little bit more, but let's take a break, and we will come back, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but we'll talk about the NBA, too. I want to get your thoughts about the NBA. This is the Goon Squad. Sports Radio Show on WYBL Radio. Put the women and children to bed. The Goon Squad is here. Talking to my man, Ice Water out of Ohio. It's good to talk sports with this guy. This is a guy that I go to, especially on Facebook, when there's a big fight happening. We're going to talk about the fight game a little later because I want to keep you here to talk about the fight game because you're always in Las Vegas covering those fights. And before I put the money on the wood, I got to talk to Ice Water. But before we do that, let me get your take on, I know you're in Ohio. What's happening in Ohio? Are people kind of charged up about LeBron and the speculation that Kevin Love is coming back or coming to the Cavs? The deal is not sealed yet. And what's going on with the folks in Ohio about the NBA and the key Cleveland Cavaliers?
Well, I mean, of course, you know, people are crazy, particularly up in Northeast Ohio near Cleveland and Akron, because they were so hurt when LeBron left the first time. And to know that he's coming back home or has made it official, it just kind of makes everybody feel good inside. Because let's be real about this. 4 years ago, I think it was about 4 years ago, or five, nobody ever thought LeBron James would ever return to Cleveland, considering the way that he left. And I just kind of put together a piece on that as well. The way that he left and the way that he was treated by some media fans, and particularly the owner, Dan Gilbert, in Cleveland. If you ask somebody even back then whether or not he was coming back, and he said, there's no way in heck he's going to come back because there's no way you can heal the pain. And then also some things that were said, like when Dan Gilbert penned that letter together calling him a coward and a traitor. I don't know about you, but I'd have a hard time with that. I don't care what kind of man he was. Well, he said, we had one bad night. No, you had a bad night.
Yeah.
You had a bad night. You know, I think that's what it is. But I think that looking at what Cleveland's doing, I think it's LeBron was very strategic in the way that he put this together. I think that he thought about it, and when he decided to do it, he put a plan in place that kind of got would get him what he wanted, which was an opportunity to try to play for a championship and also forcing the front office of the Cleveland Cavaliers to move forward to do something very quickly. So, therefore, you know, they talk about him signing only a 2-year contract. He can opt out after the first year. A lot of people point to the fact that it was done because there's a new TV contract coming up in a couple of years. And that means he can make more money overall when he makes his max contract. That's true. But at the same time, by setting up the contract the way that he did, it also forces the Cavaliers front office to do something right away, because while he said, I want to stay there for a long time and I really want to be home and I don't plan on going anywhere, he has the option to opt out after 1 year or two or whatnot. He has not ever had to sign a long-term situation, but I think he wants to now or will, because now he's co-op or has been playing general manager, and they're working on getting Kevin Love, making that trade where they give up Andrew Wiggins, also Andrew Anthony Bennett, and another draft pick. And I told people that I think it's great because Cleveland is really, really hustling to try to get this done as soon as possible. Maybe they feel they're going to mess up. But the one thing, and I'll break here real quick, is this that I want people to think about. I told everyone that listens, I think that Cleveland is rushing to get this deal done because they don't want to mess it up. But also I think that there was a possibility if they waited just a little longer that they could have actually kept Wiggins and had Love too. But the issue with that is, if you think about it this way, if they waited until, like, the trade deadline, Minnesota would be so desperate to do something they'd have to take the best deal available. Then the other people would say, well, they could trade them somewhere else. But the key is this, the extension. Kevin Love has to sign an extension. If he goes to one team next year, they're only renting him. He does not for 1 year unless he signs the extension. The extension is key to everything because they want him for a long time. But with that in place and that said, Cleveland, it's like this. If you and I get into a blinking contest, right, Minnesota-Cleveland was in a staring contest, and Cleveland blinked first. And Minnesota is so happy that they blinked so they can get Andrew Wiggins. Because if they didn't blink, Minnesota might have just been out there holding the bag, and Kevin Love could have just walked away scot-free with, going just walked away and moved on to Cleveland or wherever else he wanted to go.
Wow, so you're saying that Cleveland could have kept Wiggins and got Love if they would have waited?
I think so. I really believe that.
Okay.
Because you think about it, the trade deadline comes up. The closer they get to the trade deadline, if he's not traded in by the trade deadline or even before the off season, Kevin Love is an unrestricted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
So he can sign with whoever he wants to. It's not like he's a restricted free agent. His contract is up with Minnesota. He can sign wherever. In order for Minnesota to be compensated, they have to trade him during this year before the contract runs out. And they can only trade him for a year because the only way Kevin Love stays longer than next year anywhere is he has to sign an extension. Only he can decide whether or not he wants to do that. They can't make him do that. So let's say, for instance, Golden State wants to trade for Kevin Love tomorrow, right?
Right.
And they did not, Golden State said, we are not giving up Klay Thompson, who Minnesota really wants. Then Kevin Love could say, okay, I'll play the season out here in Golden State, but I maybe not like what you guys are doing, so I'm going to go to Cleveland. And that's why a lot of people are not, except for Cleveland right now, giving up Wiggins. That's why Golden State, I believe, was saying, no, we're not doing that because your hands are tied. We know you're trying to get the best deal possible, which Minnesota's ecstatic that they're going to get Andrew Wiggins because they're like, wow, we get a guy that really can make a difference on our team, even though we're starting over. He's a great talent. So, but, like I said, Cleveland's scared. They don't want to tickle LeBron off anymore, so they're going to move forward, which is not a bad thing because it puts them right in the mix. But at the same time, I guess they're like, we would rather have Kevin Love and not worry about Wiggins and just move forward that way because we'd have a veteran team with the guys they have coming in with Mike Miller coming in, Jones coming in from Miami as well, and the possibility of also trying to sign Ray Allen. So it's a win-win for Cleveland. Win-win.
Right. I said last week that if I was Minnesota and I was a GM in Minnesota, I would take this deal, but I would try to get as much as possible from Cleveland so that I would feel like I was getting equal value. So I thought there was one deal on the table that was saying two first-round draft picks and Bennett. But my deal was, let me get Waiters, Bennett, and Wiggins. You can have the draft picks. And let me work with those three for Love. And so I guess what I always think is, if I'm a general manager, I'm just not going to let a player walk away without getting something for him. Even if it's for a year, I can work with a year and maneuvering as opposed to not getting anything and letting a player like Kevin Love. Because it seems like a lot of teams want Kevin Love. You know, they wanted him. They think he's the missing piece. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Cleveland. They won him. Yeah, they want him. And not to cut you off, but they want him because he's a double-double machine. He's going to give you 20 points, 10 rebounds every night. And
that's money in the bank. And not too many big men do that these days. So, yeah, I see why a lot of teams want them. So I'm thinking if I'm Minnesota's GM, like, yeah, you okay. I got a guy that has money in the bank. You got to give me something of equal value or to make it real interesting for me to say, you know what, that's a good deal.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but the only issue with that as the GM of Minnesota, as I said before, the closer you get to the trading deadline, the closer you risk of not getting anything worthwhile. That's why you need Cleveland to blink like they did, because if I say, hey, look, I'm not giving you Wiggins, and you go, well, I don't care, I want something else. I'm like, well, I don't have to give you anything. Because he's going to walk away. So, therefore, the ball is in, and that's why I said that they're so glad that Cleveland blinked. and they can get a Wiggins and maybe Anthony Bennett can show up again and maybe a couple of draft picks, they're ecstatic about that because they're like, man, what if somebody doesn't trade for him and we are stuck holding the bag and he just walks away? We can't have that. Then they'll be forced to take something that they really don't want to do.
Right, right. Okay. Let's move on to two related stories. So you got Durant who leaves the U.S. team. People are going back and forth whether he should have left or not. He says he's tired. I'm going to agree with the man. Last week we talked about this. If I'm an NBA player, I wouldn't want to play during this time. You play 82 games plus the playoffs. You got to get some rest. You got to take care of your body. You're not getting anything but the gratification of winning at a USA team, which is honorable, but still, it's not Olympic year. Okay, Paul George goes down. Now we get stories that Sean Marion is being courted by the Indiana Pacers. Is it a good move or not?
Wow. I don't think it's a bad move because nobody's going to replace Paul George, okay? Let's be real about that. Nobody's going to replace Paul George. But the fact is that Marion does a couple of things. He's not the leaper he used to be. He does play defense still, and he still can score the ball. And he's also a veteran that can come in and kind of solidify some things. While Indiana really doesn't really need a scorer, they need somebody that can come and give them more balance. I think Marion can do that, and that's what they're looking for because they still have scores. You know, you have to get Roy Hibbert's mind back on track. You got to get Doug West to step up a little bit more. Of course, you have to get the point guard to step in. They still have a lot of pieces. You still got Lewis Scola on that team. A lot of good pieces. But what you have to do now is, since your main guy, which is George, was the focal point and you also lose Stevenson, a lot of your scoring is gone. Now you need to have other guys shift responsibility on them and take the scoring load, but also be able to play good defense and move that way. That's why I think Sean Marion would be good for Indiana because they really don't need a superstar. They have a lot of guys in place that can play, and you need somebody that can just come in, as I mentioned, play some defense, give you some points, but just kind of be more of a stabilizer more than anything else.
Okay. So I don't know. He's 36 years old, and, you know, Marion has a lot of mileage on him. I don't say baggage, but a lot of mileage on him. I don't know. Can he keep up with some of the guys in the East? 36.
Well, let me throw this at you, though. What else is out there right now? You look at the free agent blotter. A lot of the top guys have already gone. You don't need a guard. You need another forward. I mean, it's not going to – here's the thing. You're not going to replace Paul George with one person, right?
No, you can't. That's true.
Not for the money that they're talking. Okay, they're talking about what, $1.7 million, something to that effect. Let me see. They have a $5.3 million disabled player exception. But then again, they only want to use so much money because they have other money they want to spend elsewhere. But all I'm saying is, considering that he's 36, that's true, but you're not going to get a bunch of talent for $1.7 million right now.
That's true.
But he's stable. I mean, he's not going to change the world. And let's be real. How well is Indiana going to be without Paul George? How good are they really going to be until he comes back? And it's kind of like difference between Chicago and Indiana. Paul George was everything. And you also lose crazy Lance Stevenson, no pun intended, but I mean, the guy that didn't care and he could score. But they're going to have some pieces they're going to be missing. So they're going to have to rely a little bit more on defense and kind of maybe a collaborative effort offensively to try to get the job done. I want to say something real quick about Durant leaving the team. A lot of people didn't think he should have left. Conspiracy theory going on that when he saw Paul George get hurt, I think he said, you know what, man, that's a wrap. I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, just see his face. I watched
it. I think that too.
Like, man, look, y'all, you want me in 2016 Brazil Olympics? I'm your guy. This thing right here, Nah, man, I'm gone.
Yeah.
I got left.
Yeah.
Somebody probably called him, man. You better get out of there.
Yeah, because, I mean, I can understand if it was the Olympics and we were in the Olympics that you want to play. But no. And I can understand players who really hadn't had this experience, because I said last week that the team they have now, I can't see winning a gold medal in this World Cup basketball. I can't see it. Even with Durant, I couldn't see it. And now it's looking real shaky that they're not going to come home with gold.
Yeah, when you look at the top guys, all the top guys are backed up or said they're not playing this summer. Okay.
Yeah.
So Durant is like, Durant, why not back up? And I'm not sure if they're going to win it. I mean, there's a lot of question marks there, but I'd like to see who would step up in this scenario. You know, what other guys are going to step up? So we don't have the marquee names, but who else is going to step up and do the best that they can to get this done? I want to see a guy like, I want to see, is Derrick Rose ready? Is Derrick Rose ready to step back up? They just picked up Rudy Gay, who I think was really solid and get the job done. But you have all these other big guys that can play. Can these big guys step up and really show their talent that they're worthy of being considered one of the top players in the whole world, in the whole country, if you will?
But here's the question I have. Would the pressure of trying to win and put this team on your back have consequences, like getting hurt like a Paul George? I know Durant, that went through his mind, seeing this guy break his leg and go, you know what? I need to rethink this. I'm the MVP of the league. I need to really think this. And this is not an Olympic year. I need to really think this. So will the pressure be on Derrick Rose or any other of the marquee players that are still on that team now to kind of step it up and try to put it on their back and win for the United States? It's just a question. It's a rhetorical question. But does that add more pressure? Does that put more weight on the situation? Will that get you hurt trying to do above and beyond to win a gold medal?
Right. I agree. There could be more pressure. And I think Derrick Rose just needs to take it for what it is, the fact that, you know, he needs to just be careful and do the best that he can, but also be reasonable. The other part of it, too, is if I'm Coach K, I come out and I make a statement already. Look, we don't have our top guys here, but this is a team, and we're going to do the best we can, and we'll see how it plays out. So that way, it's, in my opinion, it takes away from all of the burden being placed on the Derrick Rose. It's like, you know what, we might have some guys that you may not have been used to in international play, but we think they're capable, and this is where we're going to move forward. So therefore, we're going to use the team concept instead of thinking about LeBron's going to come to the rescue, or Melo's going to come to the rescue, or Paul George, if Chris Paul was here, he'd come to the rescue. This is a team of other guys trying to make a difference and trying to get their spot ready for 2016 and use it as a tool and see what happens.
Yeah. This is going to be interesting to see it later on in the month and see how this plays out. And another story, let's stay in Indianapolis. Your boy Greg Oden in a little bit of trouble. I call him Bill Russell because they have him at 26 years old. I think he's 62. This guy walks into the league with an AARP card. He's got to be one of the biggest busts in basketball. I know he's an Ohio – he came from Ohio State. And I'm not ragging on Ohio State. He played hurt. There has not been a season where this guy hasn't been hurt. Now he's in trouble facing assault charges with punching his ex-girlfriend in the face during a fight. Where does this leave this guy? I think this guy's pretty much done. I don't know why teams keep picking him up other than they're trying to look at his potential. And at 26 or at 62, the potential is gone. I'm sorry. It's pretty much gone. But what do you think is the future for this guy?
I think the future, unfortunately, is a little bleak. Whatever he had going within Miami, I think he was getting a look. The Clippers were going to take a look at him and maybe give him a shot if he was able to kind of do a little bit more for them, because they need a big man in the middle where you can put Jordan at a four and Blake at a four and even sometimes Blake at a three. But when you continue to get in trouble and cause your own problems, you know, the league doesn't have a lot of tolerance for things like that, particularly as we already know with the thing that's going on with the whole thing about women being abused and whatnot. That's a hot topic. So they're not going to put up with a lot of that foolishness. And the fact that he did that, I think he almost kind of knows that his career is probably over. In regards to him being 62, I said this from the beginning, and I said it before, and I'll say it again now. When he first came to Ohio State, when they brought him in, they found out that his wrist was broken, or he had a broken hand. And they found out that he was hurt. And he had been playing with that injured hand for a long time. And I'm saying to myself that I think that the guy had played so many AAU games. He had played AAU since, like, before sixth grade, year-round. And I think sometimes that was damaging to him, because when you think about this, a guy that big, or however tall he was at the point, when kids like that continue to grow and they get that large, they need time for their bones to kind of get acclimated to the body get acclimated to the new bones in the growth spurt. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if he's playing constantly and whatnot, and not, you know, having an opportunity to rest and really getting used to his new body, I think that really causes somebody like that problems, because he's probably played so many games since the sixth grade constantly that his body is wore down. Now, he was dominant, and he's 7 foot, but that can take a toll on your body. So everybody's like, well, he's a bust. Yeah, he's a bust only because of the fact that he's hurt. If he was healthy, and I think sometimes you get back to where I'm not always the biggest proponent of AAU basketball, because I think that there was nothing wrong back in the day with when you played a little bit in the summer and maybe you did something else besides play basketball, concentrate on something all year long. Maybe you played baseball. Maybe you did something else. Or maybe you sat at home and rested before, like we used to do back in the day. But now there's so much pressure for kids to go to college or then go to the league that somebody tells you, if you don't play on my team this summer, you might not get a college scholarship, which I think is a bunch of baloney. And most AAU coaches are probably saying, man, who is this guy? What is he talking about? But I'm just saying, I think sometimes when you overrun kids or overuse them, it can be a bad thing, because, like I tell kids all the time when I talk to them, the ones that may not be the top-notch guys, if you're good enough, they'll find you. If you're good enough, they'll find you.
That's true. Like,
who ever heard of Southeastern Oklahoma? Dennis Rodman, or Central Arkansas, Scottie Pippen, one of the top 50 of all time. If you're good enough.
Now, I have an argument with Scottie Pippen being in the top 50, but that's for another show. Keep going.
Look, you're right about that, people are going to crucify me too, because I'm sitting there like, Scottie Pippen was better, deserved to be top 50 over Dominique. Anyway, like you said, that's another show.
Because I can get a lot of trouble. I live in Chicago, so I can get a lot of trouble. But Scottie Pippen, I will say it, Scottie Pippen does not deserve to be in the top 50 of the NBA. Please.
Because he didn't do anything after Jordan.
Absolutely nothing but sit down when there's time left on the clock because the play wasn't called for him. Please. Not top 50. But you're right. They'll find you if you're good. And I've seen word of mouth goes around, folks start talking, and you see people who's coming around trying to find out who is the next best thing. And that's right. They've gone to different countries to find out who are the next best thing and get great players here. So I want to get your take on the NBA. We're going to take a small break, and I want to get your take on not the NBA, but the NFL, because I know we talked about that a couple of weeks, and there's some stories in the NFL that I want to talk about, but I want to get your take on what are you seeing, because I refuse to watch preseason games because to me they don't mean anything. But I want to get your take on who you like in the NFL. We'll be back. We'll be right back. at Goon Squad Sports or on Facebook at the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. I'm your host, Puma. This is the Goon Squad. I got my man Ice Water out of Ohio and giving us his expertise on sports. I want you to give me the rundown on the NFL. I know we on the show we talked about the NFL. We gave our takes on who we like. I refuse to watch the preseason because they don't mean anything after the first couple of series, in my opinion. But let me get your take on the NFL.
Wow. So a lot of stuff out there. One of the things I do like, and I know you're going to be like, wow, did you just say that? Depending on how the quarterback Yeah, you're going to say that. I'm going to say it anyway. Depending on how the quarterback plays and how the defense plays, I think that this team could really be solid. And I watch them, and I just think if the quarterback takes care of the football and the defense steps up, they can really make a major difference. And that's right where you're at, Chicago Bears.
Oh man, come on, man.
And I'm telling you. I said this. They have to be able to play controlled football. And I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl or nothing like that, okay? But I'm just saying they have the talent. They have the talent with the wide receivers. They have a decent defense. Can be with a decent defense. When they get some things together, they can make some moves. They can make some things happen. Because everybody's excited about the Eagles, Packers. I mean, it's really kind of topsy-turvy. I know you guys were talking about this last week, but I think overall this whole thing is, you know, everybody's so pumped about the Broncos. Still, I mean, after last year, still we're shaky. I'm shaky, and I can say that now because they got blew out in the Super Bowl. But I'm a little shaky on the Broncos because of the fact that, you know, the one thing while they dominated during the regular season, the one thing that Denver needs, they need some of their wide receivers, like Mr. Thomas, to step up and show that they're playmakers in the postseason. And not ride Peyton Manning's coattails, because that's what Seattle got them. When you look at Seattle's offense, you didn't go, oh, man, you saw Marshawn Lynch. So, of course, you saw Golden Tate, and you also saw Wilson, the quarterback. But they, even with Harden, they didn't really just blow you away, though. It was the defense that really kind of created opportunities, and they took advantage of that. So my point with that is Denver's going to have to still show me that they're worthy. I guess my thing is, and I heard the Emmanuel Sanders, the wide receiver from Pittsburgh that joined Denver, I heard him giving Peyton Manning praise, telling him that he was a better leader than Ben Roethlisberger, and he was this and that, and praising him, you know, giving him praise. But I'm like, you got to play with this guy. It's good to play with a great guy, but quit watching him like you're watching TV. They need playmakers, and that's what a lot of people do. It's the same like with coaches. Quit being in awe of these guys. Go out there and win games, because I think people are still going to be going. They're going to say about Denver, they're going to be second-guessing them until they step through the door. And I think that's with any team. But, of course, if I had to choose somebody right now, and I think is more than capable, if they can ever get out their division, I do like the 49ers.
That seems to be the sexy pick of everybody, the 49ers.
And I think they made some good draft picks. For instance, I know it's an Ohio thing, but, you know, they kind of replenished where they needed help. Because you look at the running back, when you look at Gore, but then you bring in a young guy like a Carlos Hyde that can from Ohio State that kind of just backs up some things. They picked up some more wide receivers. They got a little tighter on defense as well. And now Kaepernick has stepped through that door as well to kind of get some things going. If there's an opportunity for them to make their mark, it's now. I think you'd be asking a lot from Seattle to kind of do a magical run. Although they will be good, it's hard to repeat as Super Bowl champions. So I think it's wide open. People talk about the Bengals. Not sold on that one, even though they're in Ohio. I think they got a lot of good talent. And when you're ready, you can just ask me on my Manziel take, and I can share that with you as well. So you tell me what's
good. Okay. Now, I'm gonna go back to your original statement about the Bears. I do agree with you. The Bears have their offense is good. They have Forte. They have some studs at receiver. Jay Cutler has not proven a thing to me. Everybody keeps saying that this kid is I shouldn't call him a kid anymore. He was Denver. He was the guy. He got here in Chicago. Chicago gave him another extension that he's this guy. But I just don't see. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of Jeff George. Remember Jeff George?
Yeah.
He reminds me of Jeff George. And the knock on Jeff George was that I think Bruce Smith made it to the Hall of Fame because of Jeff George. And I'm pretty sure half of his stats were of Jeff George because he used to terrorize Jeff George. And my thing with Jay Cutler is that once you get him back there and you hit him a couple of times or you get him shaking, you have Cutler. You have him. You have him in your pocket. And then if he gets hurt, he's not coming back for a couple of games or coming back in the game. So I never want to question a man's heart, but I've seen that with Cutler time and time again. He hasn't proven anything to me. I don't care what his teammates say. You're supposed to say good things about your teammate. His teammates talk about, oh, he's different, all this. I don't believe that. Time will tell with him.
I have a question for you, then.
Sure.
I have a question. First of all, the comparison I would make is, because you already know, we said we wouldn't talk about this, but don't put it out there. So you show me your Cal Orton, and I'll show you my Tony Romo. Anyway, but
you know, I know I was gonna be nice. I told you I was gonna be nice. I wasn't gonna mention the boys, but you brought it up.
But right. But my question is about them bringing back the other quarterback. What's the other quarterback? Is it Orton?
No, the
Orton?
Bears?
Yes.
The Bears' brother. I like Orton. I still like Orton. They brought back Palmer from the Raiders and formerly of Cincinnati, and they had the kid from Notre Dame, Clawson, I believe, who was in Carolina, and say that he knows the system that they're running. I don't have faith in Palmer or this other kid. So if Cutler goes down, it's pretty much done. I don't believe in Chicago's defense either. They haven't shown me anything. They don't have the defense that Green Bay has in that same division. They don't have the defense that Detroit has in that same division. So I'm really suspect. Whether Allen can come in and do it and change the culture and make the defense more fierce, I don't know. Time will tell. But I don't see enough on defense where they go there and they're the monsters of the midway. I don't see it right now. They can probably score with other teams, but can they hold other teams from scoring? Time will tell. And so that's why I didn't really pick them in that division. I picked Green Bay, and I picked Detroit, and maybe Chicago's three because of the defenses of those two teams that – Detroit and Green Bay. Detroit reminds me of the old Raiders. They have all that talent on defense. They just can't stop getting penalties. They shoot themselves in the foot. But I don't see Chicago's defense being better than those two defenses in that division.
I agree with you. I guess my thing, though, is if we get into a shootout, anything is possible. And I'm not sure if Green Bay is going to be able to play defense the way that they used to either because of the fact that some of the guys are getting older. I mean, there was a time when A.J. Hawk was a sexy pick. And now A.J. is kind of getting older. Other guys are getting older. And right now, I'm not really seeing, I'm still questioning Green Bay's offense because they lost so many guys. It's like they are the New England Patriots, trying to be the New England Patriots. Of that side of that national conference, of the NFC.
So you're saying the Green Bay playmakers are better, or the Chicago playmakers are better than the Green Bay playmakers?
Well, I'm just saying right now. I'm saying right now. Green Bay is more proven, but my question is, can they continue to step up like they have in the past? I think talent wise, Chicago can play with them anyway offensively all day long. I mean, I think that while I like Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback, but is it going to be – I guess my question is, will the players like the Jordy Nelsons of the world, you know, will he continue to be able to get that done? I mean, do they have enough over there to protect Rodgers? And, you know, can they get the job done? That's my biggest thing, because when you look at their team, I mean, they always have a nice offensive line. You got Cobb, you got Nelson, you got Quarles over there. And then running back, you got Lacy and Starks. But it's kind of topsy-turvy. So we see this. If anybody gets hurt over there, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
Like it was last year. And I know you can say that for anything, but I think that division is going to be a lot closer than people think. And you know, who knows? Like I said, if they get to a point where it's more about can I outscore you than instead about who has the better defense, I think the Bears, as long as Cutler doesn't do anything crazy, it's like Tony Romo, like I said, Tony Romo's not going to throw a pick with 3 minutes to go. But
what I can say about Tony Romo is that Tony Romo seems like he has more heart than Cutler. Tony Romo's going to make mistakes. He's going to take chances. That's Tony Romo. You know the devil that you have. That's Tony Romo. He's going to take chances, but it seems like he's going to take chances to try to win, and he has more heart. You know, I'm not a Cowboy fan, not a Tony Romo fan, but here's what I can appreciate. This guy played hurt. He got back on the field and was like, you know, I'm going to try to win it. Cutler's not going to do that. Cutler's not going to do that. If he's hurt, that's it. He's on the sidelines, that's it. He's not going to do it.
I appreciate Tony Romo's efforts being hurt. The only thing I just ask is, once or twice, could you just hold the ball and not throw it when it's crucial moments of the game? Quit trying to make so many plays. And we lose the game. You lose the game, you lose the game. That's my only issue. Tony Romo has great stats. He has all these other things. But at some point in professional football, any level of football, particularly in professional football, your quarterback is going to have to win ball games for you when it counts.
Yeah.
Not during week 8, week 9, week 11, week 12, we need it when it counts. And we get to the postseason, that's what makes quarterbacks very good or great, because they made the difference by saying, look, you might have better stats than I do, but daggone it, I'm going to win this ball game. Because that's when we create leadership, and you have people following them start making plays because they believe in the quarterback. So that's just
it. Okay. So, I said I wasn't going to talk about the Cowboys because one of our hosts, Django, just gave up the Cowboys as his favorite team, which shocked me. I know the Cowboys are your favorite team. Here's a story that relates to the Cowboys, and I found this story today. Michael Sam from the St. Louis Rams may be cut from the Rams. Now, last week, he was saying how he felt that he can play in this league. But it may be a numbers game that's coming up where he won't make the team because they're already kind of loaded at that position at linebacker. And they play a 4-3. So the team that he might fit in, they're saying, is the Cowboys. If Michael Sam is out there and available, do you see the Cowboys picking up Michael Sam?
Perhaps. I mean, despite all of the drama and everything that's going to come along with that and everything that people are following, what have you, it really comes down to talent. I mean, can they get it done? That's what Dallas needs. They don't need somebody that's going to be a walking billboard or somebody that is going to bring a lot of attention because he's going to be in the open
mm-hmm.
show. They need players.
Yeah.
So if Michael Sam can come to Dallas and take care of business, and be a force on the defensive side, bring him on. But I don't need him just because he needs another sideshow in Dallas, because they don't need another sideshow. They need ball for
him. Yeah, because my thing is that I saw this coming when St. Louis drafted him. So it was a big celebration of getting the first openly gay male in the NFL. Openly gay, because I you know, there got to be some gay men in the NFL. There have been gay people and lesbian folk in sports since sports started, but openly.
Sure.
And that when he would get cut, what would be the response from that community and sports? Because it was like he already made the team. He was getting ready to do, I think, a reality TV show. They put the stops on real quick. And, you know, Hughie made a joke a few weeks ago saying, it's okay if you're gay, but you can't be gay and slow. When he went to the combine and ran a 4.8 or 4.7, which is very slow in the NFL as far as linebackers. So when I started seeing that, I started saying, wait a minute, this guy may not make the team. And then reports are coming out that there are other linebackers that are outplaying him on this team, and that it may be a numbers game that the Rams will have to cut this player, and who would pick him up. And they're saying that this position, people are kind of set on the linebackers that they have in their position, but the Cowboys, who need help on defense. And so it would bring another circus to your boys, but they're used to that, right?
Yeah, you're right. We go all the way back to the White House when we won the Super Bowl. So, yeah, they can have a winning game down there.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, though, like I said, it really comes down to any playmakers. I mean, it's another side show, but if he can't play, I don't care gay or not. If you can't play, then we don't need you. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the Rams do. I mean, there's nothing wrong. You have every right to play no matter what your preference or whatever your preference is or whatever your lifestyle is. But that doesn't mean you get to stay on the team because you're gay.
Yeah.
You got to perform.
I know this is going to blow up. I think this is going to, if he gets cut, and I know that the Rams had thought about this, and they got to be putting things in place, because if this guy doesn't make the team, then all of a sudden, is it gay bashing? Is it because this guy is gay and they didn't make the team? And so they're really going to have to really kind of handle this really carefully, because it was like a big celebration during the draft. I watched the draft and saw how much of a big deal it was. And now for him to be getting to the point where he may not make the team, this may be another big story that's out there and why, and the Rams have to over-explain why he didn't make the team. It may not be a good situation for them. I don't know.
I agree with you. Well, I agree with you there. But it just depends on, like I said, as you said before, if he's not good enough to make the team, it should be set that way. It's like this. Some people you're not gonna be able to satisfy everybody. So therefore, we went through all, we brought him in, we drafted him, we thought he was worthwhile. We liked him as a person, but right now with the numbers that we have, we don't think he's gonna be able to help us right now. Who knows? Down the line, it is what it is. But right now, we need ball players because we're trying to win, compete for titles, and that's all you can say. Leave it right there.
Yeah, that's true. All right, who else you liking in the NFL? Who else are you feeling? Are you feeling your Cleveland Browns over there with Manziel and all that?
Man. No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that because I'll say this, and I talked to a good friend of mine who has been a Cleveland fan forever. I mean, forever. His dad probably was with them when Paul Brown was over in Cleveland back in the day when he brought in Mary Motley and
oh, wow.
Yeah, back in the day. That's how far that goes with Mary Motley and Mr. Bill Willis.
Oh, wow.
It's two of the first two African-Americans to play in the league. But anyway, point being here, the Cleveland situation is like this. I said from the beginning, if you look at it, I understand why they did what they did. I'm surprised that they did take Johnny Manziel. I think it was a good thing for them because Cleveland has been so – what's the word I'm looking for? They've been so cautious when it comes to draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about over, what was it, 20 years? Something to the effect. These are 18 years. They've had 20 coaches. In 20 years, they've had 18 coaches. They've had that so many different coaches, and they had a number of different quarterbacks and stuff like that. It might have been quarterbacks. But something to the effect where they had so many different – the turnover in quarterbacks and the turnover in coaches has been crazy over so many years. But with all that being said, they go out and they grab, you know, they grab a cornerback or a secondary guy with their first pick. And everybody's like, well, we really needed that. Okay, that's great. I mean, that's awesome. But I still said it today, when you knew the situation was going on with Josh Gordon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Because you could have got that the cornerback. You could have got him at or the safety. You could have got him at maybe later on in down the line in the another round. My thing is, why wouldn't you select Sammy Watkins with that pick?
Yeah, he's a stud.
Sammy Watkins is a playmaker. Then go back and get Bell. I mean, but they did what they had to do, and they still with it. But my point is this, with the Manziel thing, people are like, well, can he play? I think Johnny Manziel, in the right scenario, is going to show that he's a ball player and he's a playmaker, and he has that thing they call that DAWG. He has that dog in him. and if Cleveland ever put some receivers around him and let him do what he does, I think that he's going to make plays, and I think that they shouldn't be in a hurry to put him out there. I know it's sexy to put him out there and the people want to see, but if Hoyer's clearing ball, Hoyer's the starter, take your time, let Manziel learn, then you go about it that way. But my only issue with that, though, is when you look at the schedule, I look at it this way. It's going to be scary. After the bye week, week four, this is how they start. And I think that's why Hoyer should be the starter, to let Manziel learn. They start out on the road at Pittsburgh September 7th. They come home September 14th. They host New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
September 21st, the third week, they host Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
Then there's a bye week, October 5th, the fifth week, they play at Tennessee, and then on October 12th, back at Pittsburgh.
Hmm.
That's a lot of stuff going on. Donnie Manziel, man, put his helmet on week five. I'm just saying.
And not play Pittsburgh?
What did you say?
And not play Pittsburgh, not play the Steelers. They've been hoping for this. They are preparing for Manziel.
I know it, but look, that's why we're playing. You won't see him. If you're lucky, you might see him week six. But you're not getting a taste week one. No. I'm not doing it. Why would you? Why would you do that to that kid? Hoyer is older. He's ready.
Waiting. Rating. People want to see this kid.
They want to see. You'll see week five, week six. You will not see him running the killer. Guarantee you that. Please. Look.
Man.
Hey, Chris Carter would say, come on, man. Sometimes you just don't do it. Unless he lights out and shows you that he is ready to take over right away, and it's clear cut, he will be on the bench.
To answer that, Cleveland's been selling out tickets both with the Cavs and the Browns, with them speculating that, you know, they already have LeBron there. So also LeBron and the Cavs are going to be playing Miami on Christmas Day. So get ready, get your hams and turkeys ready for that particular game. But they're selling football tickets because they keep leaking out that Manziel can be the starter. So people want to see this to sell tickets. It's a show.
Well, okay, that sounds good. Sell tickets on with me football game. And if you don't, you buy all the tickets you want. If we ain't winning, we'll see you. Look, think about this. Look at the defense. Pittsburgh's defense is coming back around. They picked up Shazier from Ohio State, a couple other guys.
Uh-huh.
They're hungry. New Orleans defense is improved. They're hungry. And we already know about Baltimore. We don't put this kid out because you want to prove somebody so they can feel good about themselves when they come to the game. Guess what? You're going to have the best. Actually, you won't see him till week eight. Guess because you know why? You are not, because week six is versus Pittsburgh. They're at Jacksonville week seven. You will see him week seven at Jacksonville or week eight, Oakland in Cleveland. Then you'll see Johnny Manziel. That's when you go see him. why would you do that to that guy? Especially if the other guys are not making plays. If they're making plays and they come in and following this guy and doing what they got to do, yeah, put him in. But why you want to put him out there and get killed so somebody could be happy and they felt like they got their money's worth because they saw Manziel on the field? Come on,
to sell, tickets.
Man.
This is a show. This is what people want to see. I want to see my Steelers go after him. I want to see them.
You gonna have to wait till week six, Boomer. You got to wait.
All right. Let's take a break, man. We got to talk boxing. Let's take a break. We're going to talk boxing next. We'll be back. This is the Ghoul Squad.
I got love for the game, that's why I rhyme and always there in the booth. Never lying to the people, always telling the truth. I feel the bass in my chest and give power to songs. Girl ripping when I'm home, about the hours I'm gone. I can't help it, the studio with Paul B. at. Tried to walk away from it, but it caught me back. Forget my pride, bitch, I even quit my job for the one that I love to work. Music, recognized I'm an artist and spilling my game. Put my heart on the track and have you feeling my pain. Seen a lot of hard times on the way to success. When I'm mad, writing a rhyme is my way to express. Lay back and fall deep in the verse. If I was out in the street, yeah, I'd probably lay sleep in the hearse. It's nothing like when you on the mic tearing the track. Then you come from out the booth and start hearing it back. Everybody there love the sound, that's why they give you hugs and pounds. Now you know you was spitting it. You got the whole run vibing the same. You ain't doing this for watches and chains. You got love for the game.
To the Ghoul Squad Sports Radio Show. Boomer here with you. Also, we have Ice Water. We've been having fun talking about sports. This is probably going to be my favorite part or favorite segment because I love talking boxing with Ice Water. This guy knows boxing back and forward, and so we can spend hours just talking boxing. Let me start it off by asking this first. Who is your favorite boxer ever?
Ooh, ever. Wow. Well, that's pretty cool.
Okay, I'll even make it easier for you. I'll make it your top three boxers ever.
Number one, clearly, is Ali. Because growing up, understanding what he went through, and people don't understand that, by him being forced out 5 years of his career, we didn't really see 5 years of his prime. Still was dominant, you know. We had the situation with the Vietnam War, and you know, being not going to war, not being part of the military, refusing to go to Vietnam, and then the fact that they stripped him of his title, which took 5 years out of his career, and he still was dominant as he was, hands down. And then not only that, when he continued to, even after all of that went on outside the boxing ring, he continued to evolve as a figure. Where he kind of really showed people that even when he started to deal with this disability that he's dealing with right now, he still was an icon that people could look up to and still make a difference in the world. That just says volumes to me.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with everything you said.
Yeah, volumes. I think he's so – he just does that. And then in the ring, of course, he was special. And, you know, mm-hmm. he took on all comers. And he fought at a time in the 70s where there were some of the best boxers. You know, I was talking to somebody one time that the heavyweight division back at that time was so loaded that all of the guys that were maybe second-tier fighters just based on talent would have been dominant mm-hmm. champions right now. And one of the guys I talked about, too, is Jerry Corey. You know, a lot of people laugh about Jerry Corey and whatnot, but he came along at the wrong time. At one point, Jerry Corey had only lost had only lost 9 fights, and the majority of fights that he lost were to marquee talent guys like Ali, Frazier, Foreman,
yeah.
Everything, you know, Ernie Shavers, guys like that too. So it's just wrong time, great boxers, just the wrong time.
Right. It's funny you mentioned that because I was looking at the top 10 heavyweights that they have listed, and Black Thor couldn't make it in the show today, but I know he's looking at this list going bum, 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 bum. Because
well, read it out to me.
Some of these guys are foreign. So you have Klitschko. He's been the champion for about 8 years. It's like the second longest reign in the heavyweight division. You have guys like Tyson Fury. I've never heard of this guy. Carlos Takem. Most of these guys are from Europe. They're not from the United States anymore. Derek Chusawar. I can't pronounce some of these names. Kubert Pulavac. Alexander Polkovin, who fought Klitschko and lost. There's nobody that on this list and reading this list that can contend for a heavyweight champion. And you are absolutely right. In the 70s, it was like when you saw a fight, there could have been a change of the guard every fight because that's how good the heavyweight division was. And now it's like, you know, it's I don't even know these guys. And the division, the heavyweight division used to be the king of boxing.
Yeah, well, then guys
everybody
saw it out. Right, the Americans ran out, though, and they started playing tight end. That's what happened.
Yeah.
They went to the NFL to play tight end. But I will say this to you, that the number two guy on that list, Stavern,
uh-huh.
He's Haitian. He's a tough customer. Tough customer. I would love to see him fight. He was Vladimir Klitschko. He wants to fight him, but the other Klitschko that retired, the other brother, he was scheduled to fight him, but he retired. I would love to see Stavern get into the ring with any Klitschko because I think he has at least a puncher's chance more than any of these other guys we've been watching. That's for dang on sure.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at this list and I'm like, who are these guys? I've never seen some of these guys. I don't remember seeing fighting. And I watch boxing and I keep up on boxing, but some of these guys I don't remember seeing fighting. And when are these fights taking place? And is Klitschko just going to retire because he has nobody to fight? Because it doesn't seem like he has anybody to fight.
Right, and that's why I said I hope that he can fight Stiver, Stavern, or the other name you can look down, number 10, that's working his way up, but I hope there's not padding the stats, is that Deontay Wilder.
Deontay Wilder, okay.
Yeah. He was a 2008 U.S. Olympic bronze medalist. He has great power, but he's just still a little raw. But I would like to see him. What they're trying to do, though, right now, is they're trying to work this up where they have him, they're trying to match him up with Stavern. So it'll be
okay.
Wilder versus Stavern, and then the winner will probably fight Klitschko, one of the Klitschko's.
Okay.
And that's what they're standing up right now because they want to see Wilder challenged by somebody, and Stavern will give him a big challenge. And if he's worthy and ready, then he'll probably get a shot at Klitschko in the heavyweight division. That's probably going to be as close as a fight of somebody at least that could at least challenge Klitschko for more than a round than we've seen in probably the past 5 years.
And even if that's true, it doesn't seem like that will be a pay-per-view fight that people will want to see.
No, considering that I think Klitschko's last fight was on ESPN.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and who wants to see it?
Well, right, and it should be on ESPN until they come up with somebody that you want to see. And then there
yeah.
to go to HBO and not pay the view.
Yeah. All right, let's move to the light heavyweights because the heavyweights are depressing me. You got Adonis Stevens, who is the top light heavyweight. In this division, you have Bernard Hopkins. Why is he still fighting? I don't know. Jean Pascal. You have Chad Dawson. Travis Cloud is in this division. Who do you like in this division?
Well, I like Stevenson, but what they're trying to do right now is they wanted Stevenson to fight up Kovalev, you know, Sergey Kovalev.
Okay.
Kovalev is a guy from Russia, strong puncher, strong knockout power. They wanted to see Stevenson versus Kovalev, but it sounds like Stevenson doesn't want any part of that. So what they did is the next best thing. They're trying to get Kovalev a little bit more attention, trying to get more people to pay attention to him. So, of course, what do? They go out, and I think his next fight is going to be versus Bernard Hopkins.
Oh.
So, right. And Hopkins, of course, will be 2 months shy of his 50th birthday when he fights Kovalev. Now, what's funny about this, Kovalev is 25-0-1, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He has strong, crazy knockout power. But I don't know one way or the other. Bernard Hopkins, at this age, even though he's old and better or whatever, and he finds a way to keep himself in shape, if Kovalev comes in and gets caught up in all of the drama, because Bernard does all the tricks. Let's be real. He'll headbutt you. He'll elbow you. He'll hit you in the ribs. He'll do anything. Because he needs.
Oh yeah, he's a dirty fighter. Oh yeah,
right. But if he can get Kovalev into this mindset of going back with him to be dirty, Bernard is a master at this. He is a master at getting this done, and he will find a way. He can find a way to be around for a while, and he could possibly beat this guy. But it just depends on how good of a true boxer that, Kovalev is, because if he just comes in, punching and trying to go crazy like he's a wild animal, Bernard might find a way to at least make it interesting. That's all I can tell you, because that's what Bernard does. That's why he still fights.
I always get this feeling watching Bernard Hopkins like, no, Granddaddy, don't fight. Don't fight, I think this guy has a possibility. Reading up on this guy, I think this guy has a possibility. I think I've seen him a couple of times. Has a possibility, if he catches Bernard Hopkins, to put Bernard Hopkins in a retirement home for real. Because, so I'm trying to figure out does Bernard Hopkins feel like, you know what, there's really nobody in this division that can really come close to me, so might as well hang out here, make some money.
What?
Doesn't matter how old I get, I have the skills.
Yeah. Here's the thing. He's getting a great check. And the other part of it, too, let's be real about this. He's not getting hurt. He's holding on. He's hanging on the guys and things like that. And he's not getting hurt. So he can keep getting major checks by just hanging around. And then what if he ends up and sneaks up and beats this guy? And then what if he moves up next and fights Stevenson? He becomes light heavyweight champion of the world again at 50. Then everybody's going to talk about how great he is. And he retires and continues on the golden boy and lives happily ever after. He can't lose. If he does get knocked out, you're like, he was too old. So what? It's a win-win for Bernard Hopkins right now. He can't lose.
But you hear from boxers all the time where they say, you know, they're feeling good, and then it's that one fight where they get old in the ring instantly.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that's going to happen to Bernard Hopkins. Like, right in the middle of a fight, and I've seen it in fights where fighter, you could just say, it's like somebody pulled a plug on the fighter. And you're like, what is he doing? Why isn't he doing this? Why he's done. He's old. Something happened, and it just, the switch went off. And so I can see it happening with this guy, because I don't know if this guy's going to fall for his tricks, because Bernard Hopkins seems to lay out the ropes, kind of bait you into things, and then, you know, he ends up winning a decision. I don't know how long he can do that without somebody figuring that out.
Who knows? I mean, it goes, but it shows you, too, how sad the divisions are in boxing. If a 50-year-old man can hang around like that and somebody didn't take advantage of it, the same way that George Foreman was able to do it. I mean, it makes you wonder about the sport. You're like, what are these guys doing? This man is 50 years old, but he passed away.
I'm thinking, I got some cousins of 50. I be thinking sometimes, make money.
And if they can sign for $750,000, put them in.
All right, let's go to super. I'm skipping some weights here. I skipped cruiserweight. Let's go to super middleweight. This is the guy who I think is the man. Under Floyd Mayweather, here's the man, Andre Ward. He's in the division with Carl Froch, Arthur Abraham, George Graves, James DeGale, with a lot of other folks in this division. But I don't see anybody in this division touching Andre Ward. What do you see? Who is the guy in this division that we need to watch out for?
Well, I mean, he's almost – the problem is that Andre Ward has almost run through everybody in this division already. And he did that in the Super 6 tournament when nobody knew who he was, when he was the underdog. And he ran through the Super 6 middleweight tournament and really showed that how great he was. And a lot of people were like, wow, they don't know what to do. But the problem with that is there was a guy that was very similar to him, the boxing, that nobody wants to fight Andre Ward now. So therefore, he's been on the shelf for a little bit. I mean, he fought recently, but I mean, he's been on the shelf and he can't get any top notch fighters. The only thing I can see him really fighting, because you got through the list, he beat Froch. I think either Froch lost to Abraham, Abraham lost to Froch, so he didn't get to fight him. But all of these guys, I mean, from Psycho Biko, Butte, these guys are not ready for Andre Ward. So what's going to probably have to happen is for him to get really tested. The guys, there's going to be a couple middleweight guys that have to come up and fight him. And one of the guys that they want is Golovkin, which is Triple G.
Okay.
Triple G. Everybody
should
move up and fight, because he's 30-0 to fight Andre Ward. But Andre Ward is such a solid boxer, such a solid guy that, I mean, you look when he fought Chad Dawson. People said Chad Dawson lost too much weight. It doesn't matter if he fought him in heavyweight. He would destroy Chad Dawson. He's that great. He's that great of a boxer and great of a fighter. So the problem with Andre Ward is he's waiting around that now you're like, well, shucks. No one wants to fight him, and he's going to be waiting so long that I just don't know if we're ever going to. We're missing, I guess what I'm saying, we're missing some of his prime because he can't get a fight, a solid fight that we want to see.
Do you think that, because I'm looking at the middleweight too, do you think that Miguel Cotto will step up and fight, or Andre Ward will come down and fight Cotto?
Cotto would have to go up. That's the problem. Andre Ward, you think about it, Andre Ward is super middleweight. He's at 168. And he could probably go up. He could probably drop to 168, 160, but that's a lot of weight. That's 8 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of weight. If he fought somebody like Triple G, they'd have to come in to catch weight maybe 164. Because when you lose weight, people need to try to – they try to keep their strength. It's hard to keep your power when you lose weight and you cut weight like that.
Mm-hmm.
And him being the champion, being the strongest at 168 – whoever would fight him at middleweight would have to come up. I don't see Ward coming down unless it was significant dollars. And the fact that, like I said, he's the champion. So why would you put yourself in that tough situation, fight on that level, when if God really wants to, come up to 168, come see me. I'm the champion.
Yeah. That's true. So let's go into the middleweights with Cotto. Cotto is going to make it to the Hall of Fame, according to experts, because he's the first Puerto Rican boxer to win world titles in 4 divisions, a commendable accomplishment. But he just doesn't seem like – I guess he has Freddie Roach now, who's trying to bring the old Cotto back and his old fighting style back. I don't know if Cotto does it for me. I don't know if he's that fighter that – I would look at for pound as one of the best fighters in the game right now. And I'm surprised that he was ranked one of the top middleweights. And I guess it really kind of, to me, I think Floyd Mayweather exposed him.
Uh-huh.
And there were some other fighters that exposed him that kind of made me think that way. It's like, if you can't beat the best of the best, then why am I considering you on top of this particular class? So what say you, Ice Water?
Well, I'll say this, from here, when you look at it, the reason why Cotto is receiving a lot of the accolades and a lot of people praising me right now is the fact that a lot of people have Sergio Martinez, who's on rank number 5, as the guy, you know, who could really fight anybody, and once he got a big fight, he could really show you what time it was. They wanted to pit him up against Floyd Mayweather, but Floyd Mayweather was like, you know what, why do I need to fight you? You're older. But what happened was he's had knee surgeries and whatnot, and he fought Cotto, and Cotto taught him a boxing lesson. And then, of course, he said, Martinez said it wasn't his legs. That's not why he lost. But Cotto looked really good. He was boxing, doing with Freddie Roach, and that's why he's seen a lot of accolades. But as you said, he's been around a long time. He's won some. He's lost some. He looks real good, and he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But right now, you got a lot of young boxers like, you know, Triple G at number 2. And, of course, there's also Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillen, out of New York. And there are a lot of up-and-coming guys that I think Cotto is really being careful to pick and choose to see who he's going to fight. Because, you know, one fight against one of these top young guys could be the end of his career. So he's back in the money. He's feeling good. He has a title. So he's going to be very careful as to, you know, he fights. But like I said, looking at those young guys, Triple G at number 2 is a really tough guy. Thinking about facing Julio Cesar Chavez, which would be a nice fight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now he had mentioned about fighting Golovkin, Triple G. He was talking about fighting Cotto. So maybe he will fight Cotto now at Madison Square Garden, which would be a nice fight. But, I mean, the problem of it, too, is, and they're trying to break this down, the HBO Showtime drama, which was Oscar De La Hoya with Golden Boy, and then of course Bob Arum over at HBO and with Top Rank, and then of course there's the great guy who everybody's really mad at right now, Al Haymon, who kind of represents the boxers. So it's kind of this alphabet soup thing going on,
mm-hmm.
but they're trying to make it so you can see more quality fights, because guys say, well, I'm an HBO fighter. I'm a Top Rank boxer. I'm a Golden Boy boxer. I can't fight you. Arum and De La Hoya are trying to come together and put some of these fights together, which is really, let's be real about this. I know we're going to move forward. But the main thing is, that's the main reason why Pacquiao is not fighting Mayweather. It hasn't fought because of all of the drama with the issue between Mayweather and his promoter, and Pacquiao's promoter, Bob Arum.
Right.
You know, Bob Arum,
right.
Bob Arum, he was Mayweather's promoter, and he kind of felt he held him down. Mayweather did his own thing, so he doesn't really have any use for this guy. So as long as Pacquiao's around this guy, they're talking about not seeing that fight. Although, when you're ready, I'm going to tell you this. They're talking about this. Mayweather said he had a secret for people after he was supposedly wins this fight in a couple weeks. He has secret people for people in May, and I think it's going to be a big secret.
So you think it's because he's the next person we're going to talk about next in the junior middleweight. Do you think see, my thing is that if this secret is him fighting Pacquiao, at this point, I wouldn't care if it happened or not. It would be nice to see. But I think if Pacquiao was still undefeated, the fight would be worth more, and it would be more exciting. After you saw Pacquiao lose in a controversial bout with Bradley, and then you saw him take a nap with Marcos, it's that, okay, he's already been beaten before. So I think Floyd would beat Pacquiao. I have no doubt about that. But if that's the surprise, then I'm not really surprised. Correct me if I'm wrong, that will be his fifth fight. I think he said he's going to fight 5 more times, and then he would step down.
Yeah, I think, I just tell you, I think it was total either 5, or he would have 1 more after that fight. Because he wants to get to the mark of 50. He wants to break the mark. He wants to get 50. He wants to go 50-0.
Right.
He wants to go 50-0. But, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but realistically, like I'm looking at this now, I was telling somebody, and I had this discussion every time I'm out in Las Vegas with some guys. Oh, Floyd won't fight this guy. Floyd won't fight this guy. I was like, dude, who is out there? There's nobody to fight. He has, does he have to go to light heavyweight or super middleweight, go up there and fight Andre Ward? Really? Who's got to fight?
Yeah.
Bernard Hawkins at 175? Well, he's going to fight Klitschko next? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just going to say this. He fights, you know, yet. When he fought Canelo Alvarez, Alvarez was big and strong, young. He found a way to beat him, beat Cotto. I think the only fight really out there would be if he beats Madonna on September 13th, which I think he will, because I think he's going to go back to boxing, that this guy does not belong in the ring with me, even though he's fought dirty. I'm going to teach him a lesson this time, and now he's going to move forward. Only fight.
I don't even think this fight's going to be close, to be honest.
No, me either. No, not at all. The only fight out there really is Pacquiao. Even though it's long overdue, people still want to see it. And I would look, as much as I've been mad and trying to hope and that this will come off, I will still go out there and watch it because there's nothing else out there right now. Nobody that I can see that can really give Mayweather a run for his money. So, I mean, what else can we do?
Yeah, one of the things that, and while we're on Mayweather, one of the things I always tell people is that whether you're a fan of Mayweather or not, you have to really appreciate what he's done for boxing because he's pretty much the only headliner people will pay money to go out and see. And he took a page from Muhammad Ali, which we talked about earlier. Muhammad Ali, early in his career, there used to be a wrestler called Gorgeous George, and he kind of patterned himself after Gorgeous George with becoming this kind of either you love me, hate me kind of character to sell tickets for a fight. And Mayweather does that. He's a master at that. So you're either going to go there because you want to see him win or you want to see him lose. But you're going and you're paying. And that's all he cares about. So, yeah, he's going to say things, do things to get things stirred up. So you're like, man, I hate this guy. I'm going to see him get demolished. And they bring the next guy up, and he just finds a way to make great fighters look ordinary. And it's masterful the way he does it. He makes them look ordinary. You had Carnelo, who was supposed to be the next great thing, made Carnelo look ordinary, made him look slow and ordinary. A lot of these fighters that are coming up, Cotto, he's the great thing, slow and ordinary. And Ali used to do the same thing. Not that they have the same fighting style, but he took a page from one of the greatest ever and said, this is how I'm going to promote myself, this is how I'm going to make money, and I'm going to retire with a lot of money and not fall in the pitfalls that other people like a Mike Tyson or other folks who are going broke and all that other stuff had done. So I always tell people that you have to think about he's an entertainer and he's a fighter. But when he goes into that ring, he is pure fighter. Outside the ring, he's promoting a fight.
Right, I have another buddy in Chicago, and we meet in Las Vegas from time to time. And to this day, we have this disagreement because he is so mad that Floyd doesn't knock people out.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell him, boxing is about winning. It's not about knockouts. And he said, well, people want to see knockouts, and he's soft, and he's done. The only person he can knock out is a woman. I said, okay, there you go with that. So anyway, but the point I got that, and I'm not saying he's the best person in the world, but I will tell you this. I said, you keep saying that these guys, that he won't knock anybody out. If these guys are so big and so bad and so tough, why don't they knock him out then?
Right.
I'm so tired of them talking about, well, he won't fight this guy. And when he does fight him, everybody's saying, well, I don't know what happened. He just ran. He ran. But my thing is that I think Floyd's going to fight. People want to see him fight Pacquiao. And it probably will be a rematch clause. So if he loses, we get to see another rematch. That's the way he'll go out if he wins this fight. But one of the other guys that could fight that people want to see, he's a little lighter, and welterweight I would love to see him fight, and he's a junior welterweight, Danny Garcia, at like 147. Danny Garcia is 29-0. He has a strong background. He's fought some tough guys, for instance, like Lucas Matisse. fought Zab Judah, beat Amir Khan, and then he fought Eddie Morales twice. You know, so those are some marquee names. But I think that Danny Garcia's dad knows that he's not ready, so he's going to really run.
No.
When
he's not.
He doesn't want any of that. He don't want any of
nah,
that.
Nah, so. Danny Garcia is a good fighter. I'll give him that. He is not ready. He is not ready, and he doesn't impress me as some of the other fighters in his own division. We're going to get to that division. You and I talked about this, Alvarez and Lowry. And you tell me what you thought of that fight.
Well, initially, like I told you, when I saw it, I thought, you know, Lowry kind of ran and moved around a little bit. But then I had the opportunity to go back and watch the fight and really take my time to study the round by round. And then I agree with you because it was like, I think that the fact that Law was more mobile, people bothers people because they think you're running. But if he was able to hit Canelo, and I think he had such a lead early on, he might have won like the first four rounds.
Uh-huh.
And then Canelo started to hit him with body shots and body shots that I think he did enough in the end to win. Or like I said, if Law did not win, then it should have been a draw.
Yeah.
Should have been
a
draw. If he didn't win, and I would have no problem with a draw. If he didn't win that fight, then it should have been a draw. Because Canelo did come back in, I kind of even where it was a draw. And then that way, you don't have to worry about it. But I kind of feel like they're making Canelo, as you mentioned, is like he's the second coming of De La Hoya, like the next Golden Boy. So they had to kind of protect him. And particularly the way that these referees are jumping in and doing things now, it just kind of makes you wonder, and the judges too. So we don't know how that plays out. But I thought it should have been a draw.
Yeah, here's what I'm starting to do when I watch fights is if I watch the fight the second time, I turn the sound off. Because depending on where these fighters fight, whether it's HBO, Showtime, wherever they fight, the commentators seem to be really biased towards the fighters that – is their guy. And so studying it and looking at it, I didn't think Laura lost that fight and that Canelo won that fight. And so looking at it again, I'm like, I can't say that I would call it a draw too, but I don't think Canelo won that fight. I don't think Laura won that fight. I don't even know if I want to watch it again based on the first fight. A disappointment in this division is Austin Trout. I thought Austin would be much better than he's been showing. I don't know what's happening with him, but I thought he would be much better in this division.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that Austin just kind of ran into some issues with guys that are just a little bit more talented. And maybe perhaps what he should do, though, is either Jimmy Little, is maybe if it's possible, drop down to 147. You know,
okay.
I think he has more power. Sometimes when you go heavy like that, a little bit more. If he can make 147, it might serve him right because Law kind of gave him a lesson. Canelo gave him a lesson, and if I'm not mistaken, did he lose to the Cotto? No, did he beat Cotto? I think he beat Cotto.
Yeah,
I think he beat Cotto. But the point is, I think that he's just kind of – there's a lot of good talent at 154. And if he wants to continue on, if he can get to 147, he might have a better shot at maybe getting a title.
Yeah. Okay, let's go down real quickly because we've got about 8 minutes left in the show. The welterweight, the guy that really kind of disappoints me, that I think could be a great fighter, but sometimes he doesn't think clearly, is Timothy Bradley. It seems like he throws his game plan out the ring when he gets hit really hard and makes what could be an easy fight for him, hard.
I agree with that. I just think that, too, that, you know, the fight with Pacquiao the second time, Pacquiao just kind of showed you that, you know, I'm going to outthink you, I'm going to beat you. I beat you the first time, I'm going to show you again. But we're hoping now that Bradley will learn from what happened in that last fight The other thing, too, is I'm wondering about his conditioning. And I'm not saying that he's in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's always after the fight, he said he didn't want to say it, but there's something wrong with his legs or his ankles or his ankles or his feet or something. And he had the same issue in a couple fights before. And I'm saying to myself, if you need to be in better shape or do something to kind of get that issue taken care of, because it seems like those are the things that really have bothered him. He's a tough fighter. He's a great fighter. But as you said, he tries to bang with a guy instead of really using maybe the boxing strategy that can really help him win a fight. And why it's sexy, and he said that even before the fight, and I'm like, well, is that your excuse to why you're going to lose to Pacquiao this time officially? But I guess I'm hoping that if he gets older, because he's a young guy, that he learns from what's going on and then he becomes a better fighter. Because he has very good skills, because he really outpointed and outmanned. He really showed Juan Manuel Marquez. He had a great performance against him. He made him look old. And I thought that's what he'd be ready for Pacquiao. So we'll see. I hope he learns from all of these lessons and become a better fighter. Because he's good, but he's still not on that level that he wants to be on yet.
The guy I really like in this division is Sean Porter. I really like him. I don't know if he will ever fight Mayweather. Or I'm pretty sure he'll fight Bradley. I don't know. I would like to see that fight. But I don't know if he'll ever get to fight Mayweather. He's 24-0-1. But I really like his attitude, and I really like his style. He's getting ready to fight Kell Brook on August 16th, which is a Saturday. So I really like him. Robert Guerrero, I don't know why he's still on this list. And Amir Khan just seems real soft to me. I don't like watching Amir Khan fight. It just seems so soft. Like if he got punched, he couldn't take it. That's the kind of fighter he looks like to me.
I'll say this, that I do like Sean Porter, of course, being from Cleveland. He's a nice guy. I got a chance to chat with him. Nice guy, nice family, everything like that, too. Not sure if he's going to be, Mayweather's going to be around for him to see him. I wouldn't mind the Tim Bradley fight with Sean Porter. But the fight everybody wants to see, and maybe if he wins against Brooke, which I think he will, Sean Porter versus number 8, Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman's a tough customer. I would love to see that fight. Both undefeated. Somebody old has to go. I want to see that. Yes, sir. I might go out to Las Vegas or wherever that is. If it's in Cleveland, I think I'm driving to Cleveland. I would love to see Keith Thurman versus Sean Porter. That'd be a great fight.
Okay. I'm going to look out for that. Junior welterweight, Danny Garcia, we talked about him in that division. Anybody else? And then you got to talk about Adrian Broner in that division. Even though he got this handle by Mayorga, he's the type of guy who, I guess he spoke too soon when he said he's taking over for Floyd when Floyd leaves, but he has a lot of mouth. He's the fighter you want to see either get beat or win.
It's like somebody, it's like a guy that you just, he's humbled a little bit now because somebody told him after that crazy comment he mentioned about Mexican people.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to be relevant in this game, you got to humble yourself because they can stop him from getting good fights. And he's a decent fighter. But I think that he needs to realize that he's not Floyd Mayweather Jr. He did do one thing that's very smart. He dropped out of the welterweight area out of 147 and dropped to 140. And I think he really has more power at 140 and is going to really help him. 147, when he went up, his power did not go along with him. So that's why you drop back down. He's more of he become more of a knockout artist and he can do more damage because he has more power at 140. I think he's going to be all right as long as he doesn't have to face somebody like maybe Danny Garcia will move up. But other than that, I think he can give Lamont Peterson a run for his money at 2. Of course, you don't want to see Zav Judah anymore. Bless his heart.
I was just thinking about that, man. You just need to give it up. Stop it.
Yeah, right. But any of those, anybody else, I think he could be a champion for a little bit, long while. As long as he can make the weight at 140, I think he could stabilize and be around for a while.
Okay. The last fighter, what do you think about, because I got about 2 minutes left, what do you think about Terrence Crawford?
Man, outstanding. Terrence Crawford is one of the up-and-coming young guys, and he's showing you that he's capable of getting it done. I just want to see Terrence Crawford against somebody that will challenge him. And it's not really his fault. Maybe he's going to have to move up to 147, because right now nobody at 140 even. There's nobody at 135. He beat Camboa, beat him pretty easily. There's nobody really down, in my opinion, right now looking at this that could give him a run. A couple people say, yeah. But I think he's going to come up to 147 and get him a little taste. Maybe that taste starts with your buddy. Take that back at 140. Talking about that where he could even fight our guy from Broner. That would be a fight. I like to see Crawford versus Broner. Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Crawford versus Broner. I'll take that. Yes.
I'll take to see that.
Yeah.
I pay to see that because he's out of Nebraska, right?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I pay to see that. I was very impressed in his comeback win, the last fight I saw him in, where it looked like he was going to get beat, and they just came back. He showed a lot of heart. So I really like this guy.
Well, you know,
so,
man,
can
I say one thing to you?
Sure.
You real quick, because you talk about that Nebraska thing. Of course, you know, Nebraska is where Malcolm X is originally from, so, you know, I had a little soft heart for that. Not saying I don't like all kinds of people, but, you know, anyway. Anybody that the fact that he's from Nebraska says a lot.
All right. You got to come back, man. This has been great. We got about 30 seconds left. I'm going to get out of here. This has been the Goon Squad Sports. You can log right back here and listen to this show and all the Goon Squad Sports shows that we have done in the past. It's been a pleasure. We will see you next week.